Now we come to the climax of Joseph's story, the double disclosure. Joseph finally bursts out with the truth of who he is. Genesis 45, verses 3 to 5. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Does my father still live?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed in his presence. And Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come near to me." So they came near. Then he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But now do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life." Joseph, the dead one now alive, discloses his identity, and the result among the brothers is similar to that of the early disciples when the resurrected Jesus revealed himself to them: fear and astonishment. The problem of the brothers had been a terrible guilt. For years they had been bound by the power of an unforgiven past, immobilized by guilt and driven by anxiety, as Brueggemann puts it. Guilt always has this kind of detrimental effect on us. But Joseph's personal forgiveness makes it possible for the brothers to begin to deal with this guilt problem. And his disclosure of God's purposes also addresses their guilt issue, enabling the family to close the door on the past and look towards a new future. Genesis 45, verse 7 and 8a. "And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God." Some 17 years later, Joseph reiterates the same truth in Genesis 50, verse 20. "But as for you, you meant evil against me. But God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day to save many people alive." The sovereign God does his own work and nothing will derail his purposes. At the same time, his purposes are worked out within the arena of human choices. God's sovereignty and man's free will are not contradictory. In the mystery of God's economy, they work together. Bill Arnold tells us that the Joseph stories clearly teach us that God blesses those who make the choice to seek first His lordship in their lives above everything else, including personal comfort, promotion, or safety. God's purpose is ultimately sovereign, but it is also utterly gracious. He purposes life for His people and works against all that would thwart that life. Genesis 50, verse 20 uses the word good, which reminds us of Genesis 1, 31, where God's creation was pronounced by Him to be good. Against the tide of sin which surges through the entire Genesis record, the God of creation and the God of Israel works His purposes to produce good. God's purpose is hidden and mysterious. Here, even Joseph didn't seem to know what God was doing until late in the story. And the Bible doesn't explain the workings of God's purposes, it simply declares them. God's purpose is sovereign, gracious, hidden, and mysterious, and it is also worked out in concrete history through the actions of real people, people like Joseph, people like you and me. Now let's see how forgiveness brought reconciliation. One of the ways God's purposes were worked out through real-life action is Joseph's forgiveness of his brothers, leading to reconciliation. C.S. Lewis wrote, "Forgiveness is a beautiful word until you have something to forgive." This is one of the most difficult things for any of us to do, so we need to be realistic here. Kenneth Chafin said, "Forgiveness isn't pretending nothing has happened or pretending that what happened didn't hurt. It isn't even forgetting it completely, and it isn't going back and starting over as though it hadn't ever happened. Instead, forgiveness is refusing to let anything permanently destroy the relationship." As you review the story of Joseph and his brothers, perhaps the Lord will remind you of something for which you need to ask forgiveness or to offer forgiveness to someone who wronged you. Joseph valued his family relationship and his obedient walk with God enough to forgive even the treacherous behavior of his brothers. And their eventual acceptance of this forgiveness brought family reconciliation. How did Joseph do that? Well, notice five important truths about forgiveness from this Genesis record. First of all, a personal word. He spoke to them. Forgiving someone will require talking to them or writing to them. You cannot just assume that they'll know I've forgiven them. And secondly, practical concern. He showed them concern. Genesis 45 verses 10 and 11. He said, "You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near to me, you and your children, your children's children, your flocks and your herds, and all that you have. There I will provide for you, lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty, for there are still 5 years of famine." Romans 12:20 instructs us how to show practical concern. Our scriptures tell us that if you see your enemy hungry, go buy that person lunch, or if he's thirsty, get him a drink. Your generosity will surprise him with goodness. The third evidence of forgiveness was an act of affection. He showed affection for them. Chapter 45, verse 15. "Moreover, he kissed all his brothers and wept over them." Matthew 5:44 says, "Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." Fourthly, there was a recognition of God's role. Joseph affirmed that God was the judge, not Joseph. Chapter 50, verse 19, Joseph said to them, "Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God?" Romans 12:19 in the Message translation reads, "Don't insist on getting even. That's not for you to do. I'll do the judging, says God. I'll take care of it." Fifthly, and there was a recognition of God's work. Joseph underlined the great truth he had already learned, that God worked out his good purposes even in the bad events of Joseph's life. Chapter 50, verse 20 again. "But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day to save many people alive." With this assurance, Joseph could be grateful, not hateful. Of all people, we who are Christians, who have experienced the amazing grace of God toward us in spite of wickedness and unworthiness, we should be people of forgiveness. A well-known British secular humanist, the novelist Margarita Laski, said shortly before her death, "What I envy most about you Christians is your forgiveness. I have nobody to forgive me." A Spanish father and his son had some sharp disagreements, breaking their relationship. The son ran away, and the sorrowful father set off to find him. He searched for months with no success. Finally, in a last desperate effort to find him, the father put an ad in a Madrid newspaper. The ad read, "Dear Paco, meet me in front of this newspaper office at noon on Saturday. All is forgiven. I love you, your father." On that Saturday, 800 boys with that common Spanish name, Paco, showed up, looking for forgiveness and love from their fathers. In the kind of world we live in, there are many people starving for real love, dying for a word of forgiveness. There may be people in your life who are longing to know forgiveness from you. If so, be a Joseph this week. Let's wrap up our study in Genesis with the end of the beginning. At the end of Genesis, Jacob has been buried in the promised land, awaiting the fulfillment of God's promises. At the end of Genesis, Joseph dies, leaving instructions that his bones are to be carried back to the promised land when the people of God leave Egypt, again recognizing that the focus of his future is not Egypt, but the land of promise. Chapter 50, verses 24 to 26. "And Joseph said to his brethren, 'I am dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land of which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob.' Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, 'God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here.' So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt." The coffin of the final verse is on one hand a grim comment on the downward direction of man's sinful ways ever since the Garden of Eden. On the other hand, it is also a reminder of hope in the promises of God, because that coffin is headed for the promised land someday. For Christians, the cross of Christ has a similar twofold function. It reveals how terrible sin really is, causing the death of the Son of God Himself. But paradoxically, it also is our symbol of hope, because we know that His death alone makes forgiveness of sins and eternal life for us possible. Moreover, Jesus, who died on that cross, rose again, thereby conquering death and providing proof of all the promises of God, which include a promised land for those who trust Him. Joseph's statement in chapter 50, verse 20, applies most fully to the cross. Wicked men planned it for evil, but God planned it for good. Genesis is the book of beginnings, the beginning of creation, the beginning of humanity, the beginning of sin. But it is also the beginning of salvation. God's plans for the fallen, helpless human race are for good. So He designed a plan of salvation, beginning especially with the covenant of promise made with Abraham, affirmed to Isaac and to Jacob, and preserved through the work of Joseph. This covenant begins in Genesis, but focuses on Christ, the ultimate descendant of this family of promise. By His death on the cross and His resurrection to new life, Jesus would provide salvation for a world lost in sin, making possible reconciliation with the Holy God once more. The story of Genesis lands in a coffin. But Carlo Coretto reminds us that Jesus' resurrection makes it impossible for man's story to end in chaos. It has to move inexorably towards light, towards life, towards love. For those who have put their faith in Jesus Christ, the end of our story is not a coffin. It is a new Genesis, the new heaven and new earth promised by the God of promise. He is at work today in your life to produce good for you and to fulfill all His promises, making you more like Christ and preparing an eternal future for you that will be absolutely beyond imagination. I trust that this Genesis journey may have been a means God uses to strengthen your faith for your journey. Go with God, and may His blessings light up your life and all those around you.